When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. And I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. Hey friends, welcome to Millennial Money, the podcast where I, Shauna Compton Game, get to chat with some super inspiring people who are going to inspire us all to get up, take back our bank accounts, and chase after the life we want to live. And I am so excited for you to meet our guest today, Dan Conway. His story is going to knock you off your seat. He left a soul-crushing corporate job and made, get this, $14 million investing in the cryptocurrency Ether.
I'm a former drug addict. I'm a recovering drug addict. And I've never felt a more powerful drug than when crypto and my Ether started to pop.
Millennial Money with Shauna Compton Game. It will expand your brain.
We cover a lot of money stories on this podcast, but Dan's is one that really got my attention. The moment I got a copy of his book, Confessions of a Crypto Millionaire, I just had to stop and sit down and read it. Because his story is like so many of ours. He's this married father of three who was working a corporate job and he was completely not happy. And one interesting thing you'll learn in this episode is Dan has a bit of an addictive personality, which I think a lot of us do, but it really served him well because when he got interested in cryptocurrency, he just couldn't stop learning. It was like a day and night obsession. So he and his wife decided to borrow $200,000 against their home, good or not good, and bet it all on Ethereum, the second most valued blockchain after Bitcoin. And look, you don't need to know anything about cryptocurrency to enjoy this episode in Dan's story. But what I love about Dan is, again, he's just like you and me. And as he says, I'm just a guy who had a belief, acted on it, and managed to get it exactly right. Dan, I am so excited to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Shauna. It's great to be here.
Well, your story is, let's just say, one that I think like great movies are made out of. it really intrigues me. I loved reading your book, and we have so much to cover. But I think your story really intrigues me because I think we can all find a little bit of us in your story. In the prologue to your book, you wrote that you invested because you wanted the underdogs to win for once. And then you go on to say that 85% of people really hate their jobs. I would love to just chat about, like, where did we go wrong building this society that hates their jobs and we always feel like we're underdogs?
Yeah, I agree. And I agree, even though I was an outlier in the story in terms of my ups and also my downs, I figured that most people, just from being a human being and having friends and family, could relate to at least some of it, maybe a lot of it. And, you know, it's a very good question. I talk about the book Sapiens in my story. Yeah, by Yuval Harari, I think. I'm probably butchering his name. But one of the things that he talks about is how human beings, one of our superpowers is to work in cooperation with others. And that's sort of the end stage of that is what we're experiencing now with corporate America. It's highly coordinated. We're creating great economic value all over the globe. I mean, look at the things humanity has created. I mean, not all good, of course, But what I'd say in the book is it's modern work in some ways is a deep sliver in our heel. And yes, people in corporate America have good lives and can pay the bills, but it's so unfulfilling for so many people. And we know that anecdotally, at least I did. And then we also know it because of the studies that I cite. And one thing I do mention, though, I say in the book, and I feel strongly about it, is like, this is a first world problem. I wouldn't call this the biggest problem facing humanity by a long shot.
Right.
I'm not a refugee. Most of your listeners, I'm sure, are not like people in deep trouble, like at a refugee level or living in the kind of poverty where they can't afford to put a roof over their head or food to eat. But that said, it's crazy to me that, you know, we have one life to live. We get 80 rough odd years, knock on wood. And if you're in corporate America, like I was, I was miserable. The bureaucracy, the chains of command, the meetings and the politics and everything. And, you know, we just take it for granted that that's part of the human condition. And I don't know, maybe it is. But when I learned about blockchain and cryptocurrency, not the crypto to buy coffee, but crypto to fund a new kind of decentralized type of organization, that was part of the reason why I got so excited, because I feel like it was kind of an antidote to some of the malaise and sort of quiet desperation that Thoreau mentions that I had experienced for most of my working life.
Yeah. And tell me a little bit about your money story, like prior to discovering cryptocurrency. Did you grow up knowing about money, or was this, you know, like most of us, trial and error process?
Yeah, that's a good question. So basically, my father was a high school principal. My mom worked at Sears part time. So we had enough money. We were solidly middle class. And I had a lot of friends in the 80s whose parents were higher up the economic ladder, which didn't cause extreme differences, but like they would drive BMWs and they had golf memberships. I used to clean the clubs at the club to play golf, and they would get it for free. So, you know, I wore Sears clothes. They wore Nikes. I mean, you know, this is like the stuff that, you know, is just part of growing up and it's funny looking back. But, but we never had like a lot of money, but we always had enough. Once I started my career, I really got into reading about finance, personal finance and investing. And I mean, really the way that translated was that I contributed to my 401ks at an early age. And I really got the whole concept of compound interest and the seventh wonder of the world or whatever. Right. I completely believe that. And then the earlier part of my career, when I was in a corporate environment and I did get a taste of what it was all like, even though I had some success, I started to think, for whatever reason back then, this would be like right around the dot-com boom, about how I might get out. And I don't know if you've ever covered your money or your life. I know you've covered FIRE topics, financial independence, sure, retire early. But I got really into a book, Your Money or Your Life, and also this book, The Tightwad Gazette, which is like the Bible for saving money. And I took sort of an extreme step in my mid to late 20s. I moved back home with my parents. I quit my job. I sold my car, and I was going to try to do financial independence just by saving as much as I could and living kind of like a hermit life. I was going to move to Eureka. I was going to, like, you know, yeah. I did a year of volunteer service out of college, so I knew how to, like, shop really cheap and even go to some food kitchens. At the time, that seemed like a good idea. so anyway, that was that. And then when I got married and had kids, all that kind of went out the window, and it was just about trying to make my way, provide for my family. My wife also has had a big career where both of us were breadwinners. One wasn't the primary.
Yeah.
That kind of leads me into, you know, then the middle of my career.
Right. Yeah. Wow. So at what point then did you get turned on to cryptocurrency? Did you think, like, quote unquote, this is going to be the thing that fixes my life?
Yes. Yes. So basically, I had all these ups and downs at the company, a company that I refer to as Acme. For legal reasons, I very carefully describe that in the acknowledgments, but basically, I had a lot of ups and downs there, and mostly by fault of my own. I realized at that point I had an addiction problem. The book goes into a lot of my demons.
Right.
And once I was able to get through that, the way my brain works is I'm looking for a way to make me feel different a lot. And So I became obsessed with blogging because I've always liked to write. I really got into that, but ultimately I had a hard time figuring out how it was going to make me any money. So it was simply in early 2015, I came across an article on Bitcoin. And whereas previously I had heard about it and I thought, oh, this is BS. You know, crazy. Plus I didn't want to feel like learning about it. I had the necessary, you know, it's like very complicated as we all know. And I was not some like cutting edge tech guy, you know. I mean, I'm like a reasonably intelligent person, but I don't have any special skills in deciphering this kind of stuff. But I had the necessary incentive, and one thought just came across my mind, because Bitcoin at the time was at 300, and it was simply, what if it goes up again? Now, so it was like pure sort of like greed, like the idea of like, how could I make a lot of money? How can I get out of this miserable corporate life? And then soon after that, it became much more complicated. If it was just that, I don't know if I would have been able to invest, if I would have gotten myself to a point to invest, considering all the struggles I'd put my family through. But it was more than that. It was this whole idea behind crypto. It was this idea of decentralization, which always gets lost in the discussion of price. And it's just like crypto, when you get into it, is like this heady mix of like greed and speculation and investing and all the good and bad words you associate with money, with this like odd idealism, this odd like sort of utopia vision, this whole idea, which the foundation of which all of it is this idea of decentralization, that maybe we could do things without this like cult of leadership, cult of, you know, top down kind of thing. So that's how I first got into it and where it kind of started to lead me.
That's interesting, because like what you're saying, it was more than just, hey, this thing might be able to make me money. It was really rooting yourself in the concept behind it, which you could apply that to anything in life. When you do that, then you get more excited. You're willing to learn more. Like it just becomes more fascinating to you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it was, and that's what, when people talk about, crypto, people that are into crypto, we all talk about going down the rabbit hole. And I always assumed that was just like, oh, I'm going to make a bunch of money. But it's a whole new kind of way of looking at things, which may or may not come to fruition. I mean, I think I'm rational enough to say that some of the stuff that crypto is trying to do might be impossible. I happen to be someone who believes that that eventually development and human activity will create crypto systems that are much more widespread and usable and solves problems for people today. But it is, the rabbit hole really is that whole idea, but it's also married to the greed. That's why it's this strange beast, and why I say in the book, like, finding crypto is not like sending sending an update to your LinkedIn profile. It's almost like a full religious conversion. It's like, yeah, especially for people like me that go all in.
Yeah, exactly. You talk about in the book this duality that you were driven by, that about taking on risk, which I think is really interesting, because everything in life is a risk reward conversation. How much do you want to risk for that particular award? How did you weigh out risk versus reward? Or was risk not even maybe like a central character in your story?
It was amazing, because in 2008, we lost our home equity line, which was our security blanket. My wife lost most of her clients and her PR business. And then soon after, I started at Acme, and I was, struggling. And so we really struggled along there for many years while my three kids were young. And, just like that, getting a new fender, getting a speeding ticket, all those things that just pop up in anyone's lives that eat away. But right around 2014, we had this windfall, and it was like finally some of my stock options vested. My wife was working for a company that got acquired by Microsoft, and she got about, I think, $25,000. And then my mom, who's in her 80s, sold her house and gifted me and my brothers and sisters like $50,000 each. So it was like, whoa, suddenly we had this like nest egg. It was like almost $100,000. And we had always given to our 401k, so we had that, but you can't really touch that unless you're crazy or something.
Exactly.
Which I ended up being. But basically, that $100,000 is what gave me, it felt like new money, even though I knew like this is the kind of chance you need to leverage fully, and you don't blow it, because this will probably never happen again. But I had that, which we needed because we were still in the hole. To be honest, by the time I invested, I mean, I was literally spending like 10 hours a day on crypto content, talking to people, meetups, the Reddits, Twitter, Facebook. Now, I'm not saying like there was no risk, because I had figured it all out and there was, I knew it was a sure thing. Absolutely not. But in my brain, I did think it was a sure thing. I was like absolutely positive that this was the right time to get into it. When I made the initial plunge, it was not really a rational thought about risk. It was more like a bit of foreboding in the back of my brain, which also had to do with, relations with my wife and the fact that I didn't really share everything with her, to say the least, up front.
I was going to ask that.
We've all spent more time with family lately. It can feel like old times, but your mind is on the future too, and what you can do to shape it. At Sandy Spring Bank, we work with clients to help them grow and protect their money with wealth management, trust services, and insurance, so they can enjoy today and ultimately pass along their wealth. We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about your dreams. Visit sandyspringbank.com/wealth. Wealth and insurance products are not FDIC insured, not guaranteed, and may lose value.
In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is, I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin' Money under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated, all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters, and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless, 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like $1 million wearing this cozy workout friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/ETM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ETM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ETM.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
So I am blown away by this interview, but we'll get back to the rest of it after this Ask Shauna question. This one came from Barry and Stephanie. Hey, Shauna, we've been listening for over a year and love all the episodes. Thanks for the constant variety and honesty for making learning about money fun. When I share your podcast with friends, they're like, really? You want me to listen to a money podcast? I'm just like, yeah, it will change your life. So we're getting married this year, and I know you've done a lot of podcasts about couples and relationships, and we've loved them all. I'm curious, if you could give us one piece of advice post-wedding, what would it be? Thanks again, and I'm so excited to hear all the new episodes in 2019. Oh man, that's a great question, and I totally get your friends' responses to the podcast. I thought about that when I started a podcast. I thought, who in the world is going to want to listen to me babble on about money? But now we're 450 plus episodes in, and I guess somebody is interested in listening to me babble on about money, so I get it. One piece of advice is always hard for me to whittle down. I get asked that question a lot. If you could give me one piece of advice, and I say that to all my interview subjects as well, so I'm kind of throwing the ball back at them, but it's really hard to come up with one thing because there's so much that I've learned in relationships and marriages and getting divorced. We could just do a whole year of podcast just on that content, but I would have to say, spend time talking and writing out a joint vision for your life. Think of it like your family or relationship mission statement, if you will. And a mission statement is just something that most companies or all companies come up with. It's kind of their credo or what they're going to be about. So what do you want to do with your life? What impact do you want to make? Where do you want to live? How much money is enough? And that's a really good question because I don't think people spend enough time thinking about that one. You want to make more money, but how much money is that sweet spot for you? What are your strengths? What are the areas you need to work on, etc.? Answer all of these questions and then put that together in a mission statement for your relationship. Think of it like your relationship GPS. So we've done this several times, and I can just tell you that it is completely life-changing. It helps us focus on us and not get caught up in what other people or family members, hello, society, etc., expect of us. And it's really easy to get lost as a couple when the shit hits the fan. So it's great to come back to this as just a reminder of why you're together and what you're trying to achieve in life. So if I had to whittle it down to one thing, although there are so many things I really want to tell you, that would be the one thing, the one piece of advice is just to figure out jointly, what are you jointly about? And I think that is so powerful and it's going to take you further than you can even imagine. You know, especially I think when someone gets so passionate about something, it's easy to forget like, oh, there are other people involved here in my life or, or maybe I should consult with them on something. It's kind of like, okay, I'm really into this thing and this is where our money's going.
Yep. Yep. And my wife had always seen me be obsessed with different things. And most recently, as I mentioned, it was blogging. And I would like spend time on our vacations, like trying to pound out another story to get likes and recommends. And I was really obsessed. It actually played in my favor in this case, though, because once I got into crypto, she sort of avoided asking me about it because, you know, the conversation could be like very long. And if I sniffed that she had an interest in it, we might be talking all about, you know, Ethereum and Bitcoin. So it led me to a sense where since in my family, we always talked about money. Like it wasn't a taboo subject. We would talk about I knew like how much my dad made, my brothers and sisters. If someone got a new job, they'd be like, oh my gosh, they're offering me 50 grand, you know?
And wow, and that's rare.
Yeah, it is actually. I realize that. Now, Eileen's family is more typical. They don't really talk about money. They don't know how much money each other has. And there's actually something nice about that. But because she doesn't like to talk about money and because she didn't express any interest in my growing fascination with cryptocurrency, I sort of tried to trick myself into thinking, well, I'm the guy in charge of our investments, so maybe this is just in my purview.
So let's like rewind just a little bit because I think there's still this shred of, or this cloud, I should say, of you know, mystification around cryptocurrency. Can you give us, I may be asking a rabbit hole question here, but can you give us like even the cliff notes, like what is crypto? What is Bitcoin? What is Ethereum?
Yeah, sure. I definitely will. So yeah, the least interesting thing that someone can do with crypto is like buy a cup of coffee with digital currency. I mean, yeah, that's kind of interesting, but it's not like the mind-blowing thing that's got so many people's imagination going. What crypto really is it's, and I will be very careful here just to give a few sentences because I don't want to bore your viewers, your listeners. But crypto is cryptocurrency is the fuel that pays for blockchains to function. And blockchains are unconnected, unaffiliated computers running the same computer program that are validating transactions, business arrangements, and currency transactions through an algorithm that makes it basically impossible for anyone to game the system, to take control, to do fraud, anything like that. So blockchains, that's why the big deal in blockchains, they're called trustless. And what that means is you don't need to trust anyone. You don't need to trust Capital One to keep your data. You don't need to trust Google to make sure your personal information is safe. The blockchain is this really ironclad, unaccessible kind of computer system. And cryptocurrencies are the fuel that pays for these computers to run the system. And so when a blockchain system, like say Ethereum, there's right now on Ethereum, you know, we have the App Store, right? The Apple App Store. And what Ethereum is working on is the DApp store. They don't call it a store, but it's decentralized applications. And whereas now the Ubers, the Airbnbs, the Lyfts, the, you know, all these different, you know, those are just, you know, sharing applications, but lots and lots of different centralized computer programs like Facebook even, they're applications that are run out of server farms, and the rules are set by the people that own the server farms. The money is collected in the form of advertising the people that own the server farms. If and when blockchains mature, especially on the Ethereum blockchain, which is number one in development for these kinds of things, there will be a decentralized alternative where you have a little bit of crypto that's automatically in your browser that helps pay for you to access these things. You get paid for your advertising. So that's even farther than I wanted to go. But that's Ethereum. It's really rebuilding the World Wide Web in a decentralized fashion. It's rebuilding finance in a decentralized fashion. There's MakerDAO is a decentralized finance platform where people without any central control can go in, lend their ether or other currency and get interest in return. Still brand new, bugs. It's a little bit buggy. It's a little bit hard to use. Actually, it's not very buggy, but it's kind of still a little hard to use.
Yeah,
but there's enough there where you can see where it's going.
Is this the future? Do you think this is the way we're moving, or is this still going to be an alternate currency type?
Well, I think I don't think crypto is ever going to disrupt fiat like US dollars or the euro. And again, I think that's less interesting. I think what it could do, though, is disrupt centralized institutions like corporations through things called distributed autonomous organizations or DAOs, which you'll be hearing more about in the future. There's some things that just can't be decentralized, but there's a lot of things that can. And the benefits, once it's actually usable by a normal person like me and not like a tech genius, the benefits are great in terms of security, privacy, freedom to operate, you know, do financial transactions without a lot of central control and things like that. I think it's coming, and there's thousands of developers that are working on it, despite the fact that it's crypto winter and everyone's sort of forgotten about crypto after the crazy 2017 bull run. The development is happening. It's picked up pace. And it reminds me of Amazon during .com.
You know, Amazon
spiked then it crashed down to like $2, but it was still working, building and everything. And now you see where Amazon's at now. So
yeah.
I am a true believer, but I think it's coming.
Yeah, look at it now. Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. And everything about this is so super fascinating to me. I got to chapter 26 in your book, which you titled Now, and it talks about all of those kind of scary changes that started happening in the market for cryptocurrency.
And I love it. You say it was like a 9.0 earthquake with an infinite number of 9.0 shocks,
yeah.
Which I live in Los Angeles, so I understand that that metaphor there. And that you had this moment where you thought like, oh my gosh, if this all crashes, like I'm going to have to go tell my kids and my wife, as you say, dear old dad fucked up. And, you know, I can imagine that moment of fear. And of course, it didn't go that way, but I'd love for you to share a little bit of that story. Like what was happening when things were crashing down and how were you feeling through those moments?
Yeah, it was, even though it was obviously like amazing and thankfully for me, it ended well, I wouldn't want to relive it again. I'm a former drug addict. I'm a recovering drug addict. And I've never felt a more powerful drug than when crypto and my ether started to pop. And
wow.
I bought it at 12 and it would go up some days. Once 2017 really started, I mean, I would go to a movie, and when I came out of the movie, I'd be up like $600,000.
Oh my God.
And even more than that, I mean, there were days where there were like multi-million dollar swings.
Oh.
And I couldn't get over, I mean, the euphoria was intense and amazing. I mean, it's like you're manic depressive, right? The manics love the manic part.
Yeah.
I felt I hit my stride and I was telling everyone about it. And I didn't even care if they were going to invest, but I had so much wind in my sails that I was like the perfect communicator. And like 12 people in my orbit, including like the retired insurance salesman in the neighborhood and my tax guy who told me that I should get out of it. But by the end of the meeting, he decided to invest 10,000 in it. And then the next day he called me and said he put 20,000 in. So then when it crashed though, even if I was way up on paper, you know, it was like the depths of hell. It was because when crypto crashes, you never know when it's going to stop crashing, especially then. It's gotten less volatile and it will continue to be, but a little bits of money could people selling could cause a panic. And it was just like, you know, I had to kind of like try to go to sleep early or just try to some way to get my mind off it. At the very end, that's when even I realized in my, you know, like this dream state I had sort of halfway been living in for about 9 months, that I would be crazy if I didn't take more off the table. And I had a financial advisor firm and he sent me a note and he just said, today, the photographer that was going to take our pictures didn't show up. He quit to trade Bitcoin full time. He goes, I have 2 80-year-old investors who have both asked me if this is the right time to buy crypto. And he basically said, in all my years of experience, 20 years of experience, I've never seen this happen with an emerging asset. And I cannot imagine that it would be a good thing. And, you know, he's a friend of mine too. He was a very good straight man. And it really forced me to get to that scene where I'm kind of just really trying to rip apart the part that I was addicted to it from the tart where, you know, I've got a family and kids.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's that? I mean, how do you make that evolution now? How do you, you know, stick with something that obviously is, you know, made you a ton of money, but also balance that out?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And you know, so basically the crazy thing is for the past 2 years, I've been writing the book with all my obsessiveness and focus and multiple painful edits, all that kind of stuff. And so I really now I've got to take a step back. And, you know, some of the things I start to grapple with at the very end is, you know, why do I have these chips on my shoulder? Why do I always need to be proving myself beyond the great, you know, the financial piece and all the rational stuff about decentralization? Clearly, I was trying to prove something to everyone, including myself. And I talk about that in the book, even when it's kind of embarrassing. So I can't go on. I can't go on like this. I get another first world problem, you know, I've got a number of forays, meditation. Now we sound like cliche meditation. I do open water swimming.
Hey, that stuff is awesome. Yeah.
Yes, I know, but I need to do that. And, you know, I try to make it sound like it's not a happily ever after. I take my position any day of the week, obviously, but I'm going to have to work for it because I do have demons and they can come back out. And in this case, like they call them my flip side. You know, my flip side helped me get to this point. So I've got to kind of be proud of him in a way, but I've got to look beyond that and try to live in the moment more.
Yeah. Wow. So much good stuff. Dan, if you could sit with someone for a few minutes and maybe they could pick your brain, what would you want them to take away? Maybe like, you know, two or three takeaways from your journey of going from hating work to the, you know, this amazing discovery into the millionaire status. Like, what do you think are the couple of things that are most important that people should know?
I would say the first one is like, it's never too late to reinvent yourself, you know, in any way. And I'm proof of that. I mean, it, you know, I 4 years ago, I wasn't even writing, you know, but I got sober and somehow I got a seed of inspiration and I just kind of fed it every day. And, you know, I ended up with the crypto stuff, but even more importantly, I wrote this book and I'm more proud of that than the crypto stuff. Because it took a lot of perseverance. So it's never too late to do that. It really isn't. If you just can start small and, you know, and just keep going, you can get there. The other is that, you know, I think, you know, hey, we only get one life to live. And I think we take corporate life for granted, how miserable it is. It's why movies like 9 to 5 and The Matrix and Office Space are so like cult hits, because everyone recognizes it. And I admire you doing this podcast and putting up your shingle and all the work that you do as an independent person. And I think that, you know, I do think that corporate America is ripe to be disrupted. And that includes the tech darlings like Facebook and Google and Twitter, maybe even especially them. But I think those would be the two big takeaways. The other would be, is about if you're considering crypto as an investment, because I know a lot, your listeners are, you know, interested in investing, obviously. I would say the one thing I would say about it is it's super high risk, obviously, but there's a lot of high risk. There's a lot of high risk assets out there, you know, currency, derivatives, all this kind of stuff. The thing about crypto is that I think the risk is there, but the reward, I have every confidence that it's going to pop again in the next few years. No one knows when, but there's too much happening on the developer end for it not to. So I would recommend, and I'm not a financial advisor, you know, all that, but I would recommend for people that have a high risk tolerance to consider putting 5 or 10% of their money into crypto if they are looking at for a high risk investment that could pop and is also uncorrelated with other investments. But from this interview, people know my story. So take it with a grain of salt, people.
So I know you've already decided you absolutely have to read Dan's book, Confessions of a Crypto Millionaire. It's available on Amazon. I promise you, it is a fascinating story to read. Again, even if you aren't into cryptocurrency, or you can head over to Dan's website, danconwayrider.com, to connect with Dan. Thanks so much for checking out this episode, and a big thanks to our sponsors that make this show possible. Remember to subscribe in your favorite podcast player so you never miss an episode. But before you leave, I want to empower you to embrace where you are today, the good and the not so good. And remember, nothing lasts forever. Just keep taking small steps every day and remember how awesome you truly are.
Whatever you're saving up for, a CD from Sandy Spring Bank lets you grow your savings at a guaranteed rate. Right now, earn interest at 4.5% APY on an 8-month CD special or 4.25% APY on a 14-month CD special. Learn more at sandyspringbank.com/CD specials. Minimum opening deposit to earn the annual percentage yield is $500 for the 8-month CD special and $2,500 for the 14-month CD special. Member FDIC.